Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, and welcome to the A24 Project here on the Nerd Party, the only podcast that takes you through the back catalogue of A24 films, two films every fortnight. Wait, scratch that. We need a new intro because we've actually finished our journey through the back catalogue and can now review the new releases. Well, release of A24 films. I'm your co-host Dallas King, and with me as always is Lee Hutchison. How are you after our little extended vacation in September?
Yeah, it's been really good. It's nice to have a new film to talk about, a slightly new format as well with these sort of individual movies going forward. Yeah, it's nice that we've got a bit of normality back in terms of watching new films and being able to see them in the cinema.
Indeed, yes. Now, I know that we dropped a couple of interviews for our A24 fans to keep them satisfied during September, but today, you know, we finally have a new film to review in the form of Sofia Coppola's On the Rocks, which is at cinemas now, including our local independents up here in Scotland, such as the Belmont Film House in Aberdeen, Film House in Edinburgh, and the Glasgow Film Theatre. So if you are in Scotland and do want to watch the film on the big screen, go please support your local independents. And for everyone else, it is out on Apple TV Plus on October 23rd. But of course, before we get to that, you know, we've had a month off, so there's a few bits of A24-hour news to get through. The first one is Zendaya made history becoming the youngest winner of the Emmy for Lead Actress in a Drama Series for A24's Euphoria, and is now also set to star in an A24-produced biopic of Regina Spektor, being handpicked for the role by the woman herself. So, Lee, what did you make of Zendaya's big win at the Emmys and this latest role for her?
I mean, I've lost all track of when awards season is at the moment. Like, I'm sitting there thinking, is it usually this time of year for some things like that? It was, very surprising that it was even happening. I think I woke up one day and I was like, oh, they had an Emmy session and stuff. And I should correct you, Dallas, it was Ronnie Spector, not Regina Spector. easy done, you know, Ronnie Spector, and then Regina Spector, more of a Russian white singer. So interesting casting choice there. But no, I'm curious to see this one. Ronnie Spector is someone I know next to nothing about, and kind of biopics aren't something we tend to associate with A24, and it seems that with this, and probably, you know, the trailer we're about to talk about, they might be moving a bit more towards potentially more award-friendly fare without sort of trying to be maybe the outsider with some of these things. It's going to be interesting. Biopics are always kind of tend to catch the eyes at the award ceremony. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing something like that. And as I say, it might turn me into a Ronnie Spector fan, but Zendaya has become one of those people. I mean, my first introduction to her was in that Spider-Man film, and I was like, I would like to see more of this, you know, young actress in kind of films, TV, etc. And she's not really put a foot wrong, and she seems to be picking really exciting projects to work on, whether it's something like Euphoria, then you've got kind of the upcoming June, then something like this. You know, it seems to be that she's going for gold. I'm really excited to see where her career will go in just a couple of years and beyond.
Exactly, and we'll be probably delving into her Emmy win in a bit more detail in an upcoming episode, as we've, you know, but once On the Rocks is out, I mean, that's, again, us pretty much done for films until A24 start distributing in the US again. Given that they're a New York-based company, it's probably safe to say that won't be until at least the New York cinemas open up. So I guess we'll have to wait. I mean, both Lee and I have already seen St. Maud. We actually saw it about a year ago now at the London Film Festival last year, but it's still in the bag for A24, but they haven't at this moment decided when they're going to release it. They haven't got provisional dates for anything, but they have started the movie marketing machine up again. And we were lucky enough to get a poster and trailer for Minari in the past week or so. This is by Lee Isaac Chung, and it was a big hit at the Sundance Film Festival from earlier this year. Again, like you say, it really seems like, you know, the concept of time is completely lost on us in 2020. And the fact that, you know, it seems like not that long ago, but then again, it was about 9-10 months ago. It's just bizarre. And yeah, no, I know our very own Nerd Party's Sean Eastridge was raving about this one when it came out at Sundance. So is this one that you're looking for now, having seen the a wee bit more information coming out from the trailer.
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones. I think it's safe to say it's going to be ticking a lot of boxes. I think what's going to be interesting is in terms of when we actually see this. I think firstly, the reaction on Twitter was pretty unanimous. It seemed to be everyone was tweeting, I'm ready to cry at this film. I think what we're going to probably going to see is, I think it's going to be interesting because I think there's rumours that the film will come out in February. Now, February is traditionally a dumping ground, but what it is actually it's still part of the new Oscar eligibility window. So it could be the case that we do see things like Minari, The Green Knight, you know, in particular, perhaps making sort of releases or limited releases to get into sort of that Oscar contender spots in kind of that February, January time. I think that could be really interesting if that's the way it's going to kind of go, because A24 would never have a better shot than now. You know, what's it going to go up against? Bad Boys for Life? You know, there's not much else kind of pickings. You could have films that an outsider piece, a genre piece like The Green Knight, that could be in the mix. You know, Dave Patel potentially, you know, Kate Dickey, supporting actress, best film, best adapted screenplay, you know, who knows, Minari, something as well. And I think it's gonna be exciting as well, because I know we're both fans of the original sort of Japanese animation Your Name, so obviously Chung is going to go on and do that after this, you know, produced by J.J. Abrams, so that will also be really interesting, because this will be my first introduction to him. And I loved Steven Yeun in Burning as well. I thought that was a fantastic Korean film as well. So it's got a lot of really exciting things. I think it seems like I watched the trailer and I thought, oh, it's obviously an A24 film, but you could see it being a very traditional Oscar release for, you know, a lot of different studios. So I think we might see a little change in A24, how they potentially market, you know, instead of going in with things like Uncut Gems, where it's always going to be the outlier. It's always going to be the dark horse if, like, you know, an Adam Sandler even gets nominated at all for something like that. So maybe they're going to be sort of, you know, still doing these sorts of original great films that we associate with them, but also kind of maybe tying themselves into films like this that will potentially give them the prestige. And, you know, they might not have a better chance than this kind of next Oscar window.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, could a Korean film win Best Picture 2 years in a row? I'm not sure, but I guess A24 could potentially push it that way. Like you say, I mean, I thought, yeah, Steven Yeun was, you know, probably best known to everyone at the moment for The Walking Dead show and his rather spectacular exit from The Walking Dead. But like you say, Burning, I thought, was a fantastic film, and he was excellent in it. And I think, yeah, it's going to be great to see him in another sort of lead role here. And yeah, in terms of Oscar season, I guess, yeah, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with that. I mean, for a while it was looking like there was only going to be like The Invisible Man and Birds of Prey eligible for the Oscars, but they have moved things around to allow for sort of films that, what was it, the phrase they were using, films that had scheduled a cinematic release but maybe potentially hadn't been able to go through, that we're going to be eligible. So yeah, it's going to be a very, very odd Oscar season this year. But, you know, I guess, yeah, we'll see what A24's plans are for releases and stuff like that, because I know they did get a bit of stick over the summer for not releasing anything and not even committing to releasing anything. And it was all these trailers are just, say, coming soon and stuff like that. In fact, the only thing they have actually released over the summer was an A24 beach towel, which is one of the few things I have not purchased from the A24 shop.
Yeah, I think people have been, I suppose it's difficult for A24 because we think of, like, we are chatting about this just as No Time to Die has, you know, screwed things up big time for cinemas and beyond, really, with the impact of that. You know, I suppose the difficulty with A24 is, I mean, obviously we are a British podcast talking about an American distributor. You know, I suppose we're not in a position where would, you know, a very British studio be opening if, you know, London and Edinburgh were off the kind of ticket for being able to get films into. Probably not. You know, you probably see the stats of where sort of A24 films, you know, are profitable and rack up the money. It'll be in places like Chicago, New York, all up and down the West Coast. You know, that is completely off just now. So, you know, I suppose it would be a bigger gamble for them trying to release it into probably red states, you know, places like Florida, which have really lax rules at the moment about in terms of what, you know, people in entertainment and restaurants and bars can do. You know, they would just, you know, A24 films, you know, they tend to make kind of low profit by and large. You know, that if you cut out the places that they've got, they're doomed. So, you know, I suppose there's, and they probably can't sell to an international market really at the moment as well. So yeah, it's a messy situation that they found themselves in. You know, it's, I think someone described it yesterday, you know, A24 will essentially just be carrying a lot of debt. You know, it'll be on a smaller scale, obviously, but they will have these Green Knights, Minaras, you know, Zolas, etc., that are just sitting there. The money's been spent and it's just ready to go out into the world and make money again. It's, I just can't wait for that moment. But I think just the way America is at the moment, I think we could be a long, long way off it.
Yeah, because, I mean, yes, some of the stuff that A24 has in its favour compared to someone like, say, MGM with the Bond film is that, you know, they do produce some films, but they're not a major producer. They are primarily a distributor. So I know that sometimes they maybe pay over the odds at Sundance or somewhere for a film, say like $10 million for Boy State, which was a record for the documentary and whatever. But in terms of, at least they don't have any films which are sitting with like a $200 million production cost plus an extra $200 million for marketing and stuff like that. So they do have that. I guess, you know, they're in a comfortable position where they can probably just sit on these until they're ready to get them back out into cinemas, and I guess just survive off the profit of slightly overpriced t-shirts and candles until then. And I guess maybe even look at, it's what you said there, sort of international distribution. I guess, will we start to see a situation where A24 look to potentially become a worldwide distributor for some films? Because something quite interesting I've noticed with the film we're about to talk about, On the Rocks, is A24 are now actively promoting On the Rocks' cinematic release here in the UK. They're sort of retweeting positive reviews from the likes of The Guardian and Little White Lies and sort of pushing the cinema screenings over here in the UK, even though, you know, it got, you know, premiered at the New York Film Festival and has some screenings in the US, but not that many. So it's interesting that they are promoting the UK release almost as much as they would normally do a US release, and the fact that, you know, a lot of their money will come from the deal with Apple on this one as well.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting kind of the way this Apple deal has been kind of working. I don't see them pushing The Green Knight and Zola and Minari kind of onto Apple TV, but it's hard to say what's going to kind of happen. It could be possible. I just don't know the ins and outs of kind of that marketing deal, but, you know, as I say, it just seems like hard to imagine America, especially at the moment. You know, the UK have made a conscious decision to shut down their cinemas. They are not being asked by the government to close them. You know, that's an argument in itself, essentially. But it's one of those things, like New York, San Francisco, there's been brief windows of sort of the cinemas kind of opening, sorry, Los Angeles as well, but nothing where you have any sort of hope that there's going to be a big turnaround there. I mean, that country is unfortunately a mess at the moment.
Yeah, and, you know, New York is one of the major places for it to be open in order to get back to business as normal. And it's also the setting of the film we're talking about today. So On the Rocks is the latest film from Sofia Coppola, director of Virgin Suicide, Somewhere, Marie Antoinette, The Beguiled. And it's the second collaboration with A24 following The Bling Ring, and Caesar once again team up with Lost in Translation star Bill Murray. So Rashida Jones stars as Laura, a wife, a mother, and a writer who is stuck in a rut approaching her 39th birthday, and then starts to suspect her husband of having an affair. Egged on by her Lothario father, they set out on a detective mission to discover the truth. So the film stars Rashida Jones, Bill Murray, Marlon Wayans, and Jenny Slate. So, Lee, what were you going into this film expecting, and did it live up to your expectations?
I think we discussed it like a couple months ago when the trailer came out, that it, you know, you think of something like, if we go all the way back, you know, nearly 100 films ago to The Bling Ring, I mean, that was a hell of a trailer that gripped you in and you were like, oh, I need to see that. When I kind of saw the trailer for this, I thought, that's kind of quite traditional. It seems nice, Okay, yeah, I'm always keen to see a Sofia Coppola film. I like Bill Murray. I think Rashida Jones is someone that I would love to see more of in kind of films. Surprised by Marlon Wayans been cast. But it was one of those ones I was like, it looks fine. It's an A24 film. I will go see it. And yeah, I went in to kind of see it on Friday. I went to see it as an interesting kind of double bill. I went to see an Apple TV movie followed by a Netflix movie, The Trial of Chicago 7, in a cinema. And they were really popular screenings. So the argument that it puts film fans off going along to see them when they only have to wait a couple of weeks to see them, you know, is you know, certainly not true, it seems, based on that. But I really, really enjoyed it. You know, it's not her best work. It's not a great film. It's not a bad film. It's just a nice, solid 90-minute film that went exactly where I expected it to go. It was as good and competent as I expected it. I laughed. I had some tears. And I'm so happy that I got to see it in the cinema. I mean, we're starved of content right now in kind of cinemas. And I was just really happy that I got to see this film and I enjoyed my experience. And that's all that I can ask for from any sort of film right now in the cinemas. What about for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you with the trailer and the poster were very sort of generic and, dare I say it, sort of lazy in that, yeah, it sort of set out the stall, the plot of the movie. It set out that, yep, Bill Murray's going to do his Bill Murray thing, but yeah, there was nothing that was shouting out saying this is a must-see film. It was like, great, I like everyone involved, I definitely will watch it, but you know, if I was drawing up a list of my most anticipated films of the year based on the marketing materials, this would certainly not be up there. And then I went in, like I say, I went in on Friday afternoon, very up to screening, but then it was a Friday afternoon, I believe. It has been doing quite well. It's interesting that the distributors that are almost the most committed to putting their films into cinemas at the moment are actually Netflix and Amazon Prime and Apple TV. It's bizarre. We're living in a bizarre topsy-turvy world, but that's where we are. And I have to say that, yeah, I enjoyed the film. I think it's very slight. It's, you know, the plot is sort of wafer thin. It's like wife suspects husband of having an affair, tries to find out if he is. But I think the more meaty thing, which sort of almost sort of was skirted away with the trailer and stuff like that, was it's a much better film when it sort of delves deeper into the father-daughter relationship, because that's clearly where a lot of her issues and sort of suspicions about her husband are stemming from. And I think that's where the film really sort of comes alive, is when it's just the sort of two of them, I think, coming together. I mean, what did you make of that central pairing of Rashida Jones and Bill Murray?
I thought they worked really well together. It took me a little bit of time to settle into Bill Murray's Felix as a sort of art owner, sort of like, he had this weird affect, so this is voice where it was kind of like slightly posh, which it was just sort of, it just took me a little while to kind of adapt to this kind of Bill Murray character. I mean, it wasn't too far away from who Bill Murray is. I mean, it seemed like it mixes in a lot of the myths about him as sort of this Don Juan that kind of gets into all these mad adventures, whether it's turning up at student parties in St. Andrews or doing crazy things with golf. It felt like, I suppose, similar to Lost in Translation, where it was Bill Murray of a certain time, you know, at his kind of lowest ebb of his career, to this is sort of Bill Murray, the myth, the legend, almost, I thought. I thought Rashida Jones was really good. I think she's such an underrated actress. I mean, I really enjoy her sort of TV work. I thought she was great as Anne in Parks and Recreation, you know, things like that. And it was good to see sort of Jenny Slate back as Vanessa, obviously appearing from Obvious Child. I just thought I had a really good kind of central cast. But as you say, the plot was kind of wafer thin, but that was kind of forgivable because you had such a nice pairing at the heart of it. It was just nice to watch them drinking whiskey, going to nice little places in New York, going for a drive. It's one of those things, I wonder how this film would have played if we watched it now, you know, in amongst a year of, you know, films like The Green Knight, you know, No Time to Die, all these sorts of things, how this film would kind of potentially rate and sort of stand up. Whereas you watch a film like this and you think, in a kind of COVID world, you're like, I want to go to New York again. I want to go out for a nice drink. I want to be able to hug people and go to parties. It's one of the things, I don't know about you, but like, it, little things like that just really stand out, where it's like, God, they really did film this in another time. I mean, it's what, been nearly 6 months now that we've been kind of going through this, and it just, you watch that film and it just feels like a relic of another time. It's crazy how the brains changed, and I think it made the film, it elevated the film perhaps in a way that it wouldn't have in sort of a COVID world.
Yeah, it's weird that films made pre-2020 are already considered period films in terms of, it's like, why is no one wearing a mask? But yeah, no, I think, what did for me is, any film set in New York already has my attention, but I think the one thing that this made me feel more than any was how much I miss New York and how much I want to get back to New York. That's, I yearn for being able to walk the streets and stuff. And I mean, it's just like, I was already sort of going, okay, what's that called? Worcester Street, 81 Worcester Street. And then I was straight on my phone after, I was going, okay, where's that? Okay, what kind of location is that? And then, because it's like, yeah, he, you know, works at some sort of marketing company, and she is a full-time mum, but also writing a book, which she hasn't written yet, but she's got an advance. But they've got one of those crazy large New York, you know, loft style apartments, you know, which, looking at the location, is basically, you know, just off of Greenwich Village in Washington Square Park, so not cheap. So, you know, they must be doing fairly well for themselves. Again, perhaps, you know, part of it is probably, maybe it's her flat financed by her clearly rather wealthy father and stuff like that, who's done quite well in the art world, so perhaps that's it. But yeah, no, it made me want to sort of be walking around that area. I mean, Greenwich Village is one of my favourite spots in New York, just to sort of hang out and stuff like that. So yeah, it just made me want to be in New York, and so that's, it gets a, you know, a big thumbs up in my book for that. But I thought Rashida Jones is great. She's in one of my sort of favourite films, which hardly anyone's ever seen. It's called Celeste and Jesse Forever. It's a romantic comedy with her and Andy Samberg in it, and it sort of got like a tiny release in America and never came out here in the UK. I saw it randomly in New York at a cinema once, and I've always wanted to try and get a copy, but it's only ever been like on region one sort of Blu-ray or something, which I can't play over here. So I really want to see it again and see if it's as good as I remember. But yeah, I thought she was great, and yeah, I thought it was a very convincing sort of father-daughter relationship between the two. I thought Marlon Wayans was quite good, because I mean, certainly the majority of people may only sort of really know him from the likes of Scary Movies and stuff like that. I mean, I've seen him do series before in Requiem for a Dream, which I've watched maybe once or twice, but it's not a film which you kind of put on, you know, just to rewatch it anytime. It's not that kind of film. But I thought he was good. I thought Jenny Slate was funny, and the sort of recurring cameo of this fellow mom who just talks and talks and talks, and you just can't wait to get away from her. But I thought, yeah, no, the cast was good. But I thought, yeah, it's really, it sort of comes alive when the two of them are talking about life. Just, you know, it's just, it's one of those films where it's not a plot-driven movie. It's more of like a mood piece and a character piece. And it's, yeah, a lot of the time you are just hanging out with these two people, and it's like, it's almost like they've constructed the plot to be able to get these two people to hang out and sort of reconnect and sort of then sort of analyze their own relationship, which is where a lot of the fun comes from, I think.
I think it's an interesting one to think about as well, and obviously the comparisons are kind of there with the sort of Lost in Translation, in a way where obviously the kind of film was sort of very autobiographical, that sort of about Sofia Coppola and her relationship with Spike Jones at the time, you know, his sort of reputation and how she felt. And then I sort of felt, kind of, even when I sort of saw the marketing materials, I was like, I wonder if it's sort of diving back into kind of that world of sort of how she kind of felt at the time and sort of that relationship again. But it's one of those things, I like Francis Ford Coppola's films. I've not seen as many as I really should have. But it's one of those ones, I was wondering, like, how much of that relationship between sort of Laura and Felix is Coppola and Francis Ford Coppola, you know, her father. How does that dynamic work? Because, you know, I could see sort of Felix, you know, scrub away that he's an art dealer with, you know, a filmmaker, you know, very affluent, you know. There's probably a lot of comparisons kind of there. I'm curious to know how much of that relationship was sort of potentially drawn from her relationship with Spike Jonze and also with her father. You know, obviously this is something that she's kind of gone through a little bit before, probably not as madcap, but there's definitely comparisons there, you know, with what's on the record.
Yeah, no, because yeah, Lost in Translation is, I mean, she's pretty much admitted it's how she felt when she was like, sort of like Spike Jonze was doing some filming somewhere. I don't know, that her dad, Francis Ford Coppola, himself had filmed a whiskey commercial in Tokyo, so that's there. I mean, I'm assuming that you're not accusing Francis Ford Coppola of being a philanderer, but I certainly expect that, yeah, there probably would have been large periods of her life when he was away filming, such as, say, like Apocalypse Now or something like that, while she was growing up, so he maybe wasn't around all that much. And, you know, she maybe knew her father more from tales about her father rather than actually sort of spending time. So yeah, it's really sort of interesting. And then, yeah, obviously, you know, her marriage with Spike Jonze ended, so you do automatically start wondering, okay, was there something along here that, again, she sort of drawn on? And sort of, you know, they always say, write what you know, so is that coming out? So there's always that sort of fun sort of speculation of wondering where all the different sort of bits come from. So I mean, what did you make of Bill Murray in this one? You know, as you know, obviously, you know, he was nominated for an Oscar, sort of won a BAFTA for you know, best actor and stuff like that as well. It's many people consider it his finest role, from, you know, moving into that period that began with sort of the Wes Anderson movies, where it became slightly more sort of a serious, semi dramatic, a dramedy actor, would we say? Would we dare use that phrase, dramatic comedy actor? But I mean, what did you make of the re-teaming up? Because I'd forgotten that actually it was Sofia Coppola who'd done the A Very Murray Christmas, which also starred Rashida Jones actually as well. They teamed up for that, but this is their re-teaming on the big screen. And, you know, it's always said that he never actually sort of signs a contract, and it's basically you leave a message on his phone, and, you know, if he turns up on the first day, then you're golden. If not, then you don't have a movie.
That's why I've never managed to get him onto the podcast. I've always been exactly, emailing yeah. him. I should have been trying the direct number.
To get that number, yeah. That mobile number.
Yeah, I like that kind of repairing. I think it's almost one of those ones. I think that pairing between Sofia Coppola and Bill Murray has almost become overshadowed sort of by kind of Wes Anderson. You know, everyone sort of talks about, obviously, this Lost in Translation being the pivot, but you'll get people that will sort of argue with Royal Tenenbaums and sort of Rushmore that pivot was already sort of underway, kind of with Wes Anderson, and obviously he's become synonymous with teaming up in all those films, even though now Sofia Coppola's done three with Bill Murray. I think that they're a really pretty. I'm not a fan personally of the Very Murray Christmas. I watched it a couple of years ago as sort of a part of my 52 films by Women Challenge, and it wasn't as good as I kind of thought, like a Christmas movie starring Bill Murray directed by Sofia Coppola would be. But, you know, it was fine enough. But I just think they're a really good pairing. And I think Coppola as a director sort of really works well with Bill Murray. I think, you know, she really does tap into, perhaps, as you say, the sort of, I say, the dramedy, but maybe that kind of serious bit, perhaps a little bit more than Wes Anderson does. Maybe kind of Life Aquatic aside.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of his performance, would you say that it was 100% scripted, or were there potentially times where he was sort of riffing? Because there were moments where I was wondering, was that in the script, or was that him just doing his thing? Like the singing at the Mexican resort, I was just imagining that could have been just he went up to a few guests and started singing a song because someone was playing a guitar. That seems like a very Bill Murray thing to do, and then they just sort of incorporated that into the film.
Yeah, I think that there could be a definitely valid there, and potentially as well with scenes like when he sort of has the scene with like a police officer when he gets kind of pulled over and he has the gift of the gab. You know, it's one of those ones, like, they've clearly had a relationship for a while now, Coppola and Murray, and I suppose the more she gets to know him, she can write to his skills and strengths. And I can imagine a Bill Murray just sort of turning up, and he can just flick that kind of on a dime, you know, probably feel like the most important person in a room, but probably equally as well on the other side, you know, perhaps cold and distant. I think there was a lot of little scenes like that where I was just like, that's Bill Murray again, sort of the myth, the legend that's being kind of played up in a really interesting way.
Yeah, because, I mean, she openly talked about the fact that certainly Lost in Translation was written for Bill Murray, and if he hadn't done it, she basically didn't have a movie, and I expect it was exactly the same here. She wanted Bill to play Felix. It wouldn't have been written for anyone else, and I think, yeah, he's great in it, but, you know, it's interesting to sort of see and sort of talk about Sophia's sort of process from the, you know, basically see all of the stuff that she's done. She's sort of written and directed herself, and you were lucky enough to speak to one of the original members of the Bling Ring about working with Sophia, so let's go to a clip from that interview you had with Katie Chang.
What's Sophia Coppola like as a director? She's one of my personal favourites, and I love so much of her work. And what was it like to be sort of directed by her, this, you know, young actress, you know, and she's got this reputation of casting a lot of young actresses, whether it's in something like this, The Beguiled, Virgin Suicide, Somewhere. What's she like as a director, and what makes her so special with young talent?
Having grown up in the industry in some capacity, Sophia has a perspective that not a lot of people have, where she just understands inherently what it's like to be young and to be on set, and so therefore she's really caring, and she takes a lot of time with you to make sure that you feel comfortable, which not many people do, whether you're behind schedule or whatever, but she just really cares about the well-being of everyone on set, which is, I think, a beautiful thing. She's a very quiet woman. She's very quiet and reserved and stoic, and at the same time, somehow incredibly accessible and kind. And she was just so calm the entire time. Having made a lot of movies since, you know, not everything is always calm, and sometimes there's tension on set, but it was just the most harmonious set experience I've had, you know, thus far. And I think that starts from the top down. And so when you have someone in charge like Sophia, who's so level-headed and kind, it trickles down to, you know, the lowest of the rungs on the ladder. But yeah, for us, she always, I think priority number one was making sure we felt comfortable and knew what was going on and felt talked to and consulted. And that meant a lot, you know, as a kid, to feel like a collaborator, not like an employee.
Read that you've gone on to graduate and do a screenwriting degree. Did you learn anything from kind of, you obviously mentioned there's all these different drafts of sort of the Bling Ring. Did you learn much about screenwriting from sort of Sophia at the time?
Yeah, I mean, I remember I've spent a lot of time asking her a lot of questions, just trying to get inside the head of someone who's been doing this for, you know, a little bit of time. But she was such a champion of my work. I mean, I still send her my writing to this day, and she always responds and, you know, is really helpful. And she wrote my college recommendation both times that I went to school. So that was just, it was lovely to be supported by someone like that. And I think Sophia is such a visual writer, which is something that I found actually quite difficult for me. I tend to be so much more about dialogue than about what's going on, you know, on the screen. And so to have worked with someone early on who cares very much about the visual aspect of her writing, it was quite impactful.
What was the best note that you ever got from her on one of your scripts that really helped you?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think the best thing that she's ever said to me was just think about if what you're saying is true. So, I guess I can unpack that a little bit. Like, even when I was acting, she would say something like that, where he's like, okay, you know, this is the line, but are you being truthful in this line? Are you masking this line? Is your intention something else? Like, just think about what you're saying here and if it's true to you. And that translated to writing as well. Which is, you know, it's a sort of different, but kind of, it's the same. You just constantly have to be thinking about what's the meaning behind what I'm saying and what's the truth behind it, because that allows you to have some sort of clarity in where you're going in the script.
So there we go. Thank you again to Katie for coming on to the A24 project. So what was it like to speak to her and find out about Sophia's process?
Yeah, it's really exciting because I think everyone kind of forgets, especially with the Bling Ring, everyone sort of has as Emma Watson's character down as the lead in the Bling Ring. But it was Katie Chang, she was the ringleader. I think she was really excellent. And I loved the story as well about sort of Sofia Coppola, you know, writing sort of that note for her going to university. That's absolutely amazing. It makes a total change from your careers advisor. You know, I can imagine turning that like, oh, Sofia Coppola, like the Sofia Coppola. Like, I just think things like that are a touch of class. I mean, Sofia Coppola is someone that doesn't seem to do a lot of interviews, you know she's not appeared on this podcast, so we'll take from that, but you know, she doesn't do a lot of interviews, she doesn't do a lot of press, you know, she's quite a quiet kind of filmmaker, and it's little things like that where it's really good to get that insight into her as a director, but also as a person. I really enjoy pretty much all of her work. You know, Somewhere is probably the outlier, but you know, you think of things like Virgin Suicides, Lost in Translation. You know, Marie Antoinette seems to be going through like a huge renaissance at the moment. I remember going to see that in cinema and thinking that was fine, it was okay. And everyone seems to be talking about it as this kind of modern great film, and I'm determined to dive back in and see it again. You know, I thought The Beguiled was completely underrated. She's, you know, she does so much kind of great work. Very Merry Christmas aside, obviously. So, you know, she's definitely one of the kind of consistent directors that we've got just now.
Yeah, I mean, she will always have a very special place in my heart for Lost in Translation, which sadly I was unable due to COVID to get to Tokyo this year, because if I had, I would have been up in the bar in the Park Hyatt Hotel recreating those scenes from Lost in Translation, even if it was just to have a Suntory time, a good time, get a photo and then leave straight away. That was my plan, unfortunately. Another time. Hopefully. But yeah, no, she's great. I think you're right about The Beguiled. I think is an incredibly underrated film. I think it's, you know, sleazy and dirty as hell, but I think it's really good fun, and she really has a great thing. And I mean, sort of based on this one, would you say that she's still the number one Coppola to be making films for A24? Because obviously Roman had a glimpse inside the mind of Charles Swan III.
What a throwback to episode one that is. I think it's safe to say Sofia Coppola with The Bling Ring and On the Rocks has definitely a combined strength over that film that everyone kind of forgets as an A24 film. Yeah, I think she was excellent. I'd love to see another film from them. And I know we spoke about it. It'll be interesting to see when this film drops on Apple TV on the 23rd. Obviously, we spoke about it with the, you know, the dubious Elephant Queen and then Boy State, that there was no A24 logo at the start. There was this time, so I don't know what is the, you know, how it all works, sort of this deal between the two of them, how this works, when the logos appear, don't appear. You know, I'm still baffled why Boy State didn't have the A24 logo at the front as well. So, but it was there in the cinema. It was really nice to see that logo back up on the big screen again, and that was a nice moment.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see, I guess, what happens with other members of the Coppola family, because you know, her sister, Gia, I watched her film at the Venice Film Festival. And yeah, she had some really sort of interesting stories about sort of social media and stuff like that. So I'm sure she probably was talking to Sophia to get some advice based on The Bling Ring, which is obviously very youth-centric and stuff. So perhaps Gia Coppola may be another member of that family to come on board in the A24 family, and maybe even A24 might even pick up the film which I read about this week, which was going to be a behind the scenes documentary about the biopic about The Godfather with Oscar Isaac as Francis Ford Coppola. I mean, that's going to be weird for Sophia, isn't it, to see Oscar Isaac playing her dad on the big screen. And I wonder who would be playing The Godfather. She was just a baby. So yeah, they just need a baby to play her.
Do you think she's going to be cut out of the this new cut that they're doing of Godfather 3? Which, I mean, this has been like the most messed up year ever, but I'm still struggling to get over like there's going to be a new Godfather Part 3 edition coming out. Like, I even saw like they released like the Blu-ray cover the other day, and I was like, oh, this is really happening. This is real. That was truly one of the WTF moments of lockdown.
Well, not as WTF as finding out that there's going to be a Rocky IV director's cut, which apparently is going to remove the robot. I mean, what's that about? It's just bizarre, because I watch Rocky IV on the big screen, and it's still the best Rocky IV film. The best Rocky film. You know, he solves the Cold War single-handedly, so good for Rocky. But yeah, to remove the robot, I don't know. It's not like the robot like does has like a racist accent or anything. I've no idea what the problem with the robot was, apart from that it's, you know, silly. But who knows? But I think we're getting sidetracked here. So back to On the Rocks, and I guess that's actually probably a big enough gap between talking about the film to going back to talking about the film that we could maybe sort of slightly delve into, not slight spoiler territories, but sort of like the resolution of the main plot sort of development. I mean, certainly when I was watching it, I had a feeling that it was definitely going to go down that way. And were you happy with the way it played out? Did you expect it to resolve itself that way as we sort of skirt around the main issue?
It wasn't quite how I expected it to go, but the kind of main thrust of it, yeah, that was kind of where I expected it to go. Again, as I kind of said earlier, like it's not a film that surprised me or, you know, didn't, you know, with a lot of A24 films, it can be subversive, it, you know, surprises you where things go, you know, interesting creative choices. This went in a sort of very ABC way. And again, sometimes like we need kind of films like that, you know, and not every film can be high energy, you know, weird killer cults. And, you know, sometimes you just need a film like this where it's going to bring in that older audience. You know, I think of something like this, I would pair with The Lovers. You know, I remember you sort of brought up the phrase where it's like the Grey Pound or something like that, where The Lovers is an A24 film that no one really talks about. You know, we both quite liked it. We've had the writer director on here, and it's one of those things like it's about older people just, you know, getting on with kind of life and so on. An audience that by and large will probably watch this is the kind of that kind of older audience, and probably Sofia Coppola fans, Bill Murray fans, etc. If they're going to go out of their way to watch Apple TV. You know, the screening I went to the other day had a larger kind of older audience, which was again nice to see that they feel comfortable to return to the cinema at the moment, which was good. So, you know, it's one of those things like that A24 style that we associate in some of the standout films, you know, might not appeal to this audience, but this sort of does, and that's a good thing as well. It builds the A24 tent, and you know, you never know, your granny herself might be the one picking up the A24 towel next.
Exactly. I mean, I think in no uncertain terms, this is the very sort of definition of what I would refer to as a three-star film. It is a completely solid yet unspectacular movie, but it is a nice movie. It is an enjoyable movie. You know, it's difficult to watch this movie. You'd go, it wasn't the best movie in the world, but it's certainly not a terrible movie or a bad movie. I had a good time watching it, and I think others will as well. But it's going to be interesting to see what the box office take on it is at cinemas versus once it gets on to Apple. But I think I think certainly from what we've seen with the likes of a Boys State and stuff like that, that the Apple A24 partnership is certainly delivering the goods so far, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, the last two have been absolutely amazing. You know, I think Boys State, one of the best documentaries kind of recent years, certainly up there. And On the Rocks, I would give it, when I watched it in the cinema, I gave it a 4 on Letterboxd, and then sort of came down to about a 3.5, you know, with a bit of time to settle on it and so on. But again, I just really enjoyed it. And you know, a 3.5 film, a 3-star film, that's sometimes just what you kind of need in something like this. And I must say, the Best Supporting Actor award for this film goes to the Scottish Saltire, which I would love to do a count thing on how many times the Scottish flag appeared in that movie, because it almost reminded me of sort of the Leonardo DiCaprio meme of him pointing, where every time it was there, it was like, that's my country. That's my country. That's my country. I just loved it. Like, you know, they couldn't stop showing that flag every time that like a car drove off or they walked down a street.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's probably Bill Murray. You know, he's got a great love of Scotland. He's always over here, sort of playing golf and stuff like that. I'm probably sure he'll claim he has some Scottish roots in his heritage and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, there was a great Scottish pub in New York on 47th and 6th, between 6th and 7th Avenue. Yeah, and it was, I've now forgotten the name of it, but, you know, it was basically a Scottish bar, even though it was basically staffed by Irish people. But, yeah, you could get a pint of Tennent's in there. So that's about as Scottish as you can get in New York. So we'd always sort of go over there. It was always a safe, that little place, a little taste of home, like all the Brits, all the gammon Brits who go over to Benidorm or whatever and basically spend their entire time in a Red Line pub eating egg and chips and stuff like that. It was just a little taste of home. So, but any sort of final thoughts on The Rocks, which, you know, we haven't even mentioned about the clever title, which, you know, refers to a drink, but also an unstable relationship. Amazing. How do they think of these things?
God, it's that double meanings. It's like there'll be someone where it'll be like, you know how people are ripping the piss at the moment about sort of Netflix tweets, and I think Amazon Prime are starting to do this, where it's like talking about like, guys, did you kind of realize like this little thing? It's like there'll be a tweet that'll go up where it'll be like, on The Rocks, you know, it's not just about the drink, it's the relationship too. 20,000 retweets and 50,000 likes and shares and stuff. Like I've seen the future.
Whereas we say the same thing and get like one.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, that's just the way it goes. But you heard it here first.
Coming up, you know, what have we got to talk about? Not films, that's for sure. But what we have been doing is spending the last month sort of looking through some of the television shows which A24 have helped produce and sort of distribute via a variety of means, whether it's Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Hulu, HBO Max, etc., etc. There's quite a lot to choose from. So, but what we're going to do is we're going to start things off towards the end of October with a look at the very first show that A24 helped produce, which is a short-run series called Comrade Detective, starring Channing Tatum, of all people. But before that, Lee, you've managed to squeeze in another interview, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got a kind of couple of interviews to come with someone, I'll just tease at the moment, someone involved in Midsommar, and someone that worked behind the scenes on films like Lady Bird, Midsommar, The Lighthouse, has worked repeatedly with Ari Aster and Greta Gerwig, you know, a fantastic range of films. So we've got that to look forward to. So obviously these will keep coming out every kind of couple of weeks and so on. We'll just, you know, pace things out at the moment, which is good. And then obviously in a couple of weeks, we've got a little podcast, a little something different where, you know, if you probably listen to this podcast, you're more than likely to follow me on Twitter. We're joined by a marketing specialist, Anton Volkov, to discuss how A24 as a brand and how they market has kind of evolved over sort of, you know, 100 odd movies, and kind of we talk about what the future potentially could be for sort of A24 films and is in this sort of quote unquote new normal. So that'll be one to look forward to in a couple of weeks. That was a really fun sort of slightly different interview to kind of put into the podcast feed.
Absolutely. I've already had a sneak preview of it, and I mean, if you thought my sort of discussion with Tim Woods about D&D and role-playing games was nerdy, this is equally nerdy from a marketing and trailer perspective. So if you're a fan of that side of the business, you're going to have a great time with this one. So that brings us to the end of the episode. And I know that we have often talked about the fact that, you know, we wanted those candles from A24. We always pimp them out, but we never got them. But this time, I'm going to do another shout-out to a different company, and that is Girls on Tees, Girls on Tops, who do a selection of t-shirts based around female filmmakers. And for the release of On The Rocks, they have actually produced a Sofia Coppola one. So you can head over to them on Twitter and get one of those. And because we've given them a shout out, I'm sure we'd happily wear the t-shirt in association with the podcast and could happily give one out if they wanted to give us one to give away. So there's a nice little shout out. So yeah, I haven't bought one of those for a while. I've got a Greta Gerwig one, I had a Laura Dern one, which unfortunately did not get me her to come over during the London Film Festival to ask a question. So, but I would take a Sofia Coppola one, just for Lost in Translation, I would as well. So there we go. We'll see you soon in a couple of weeks, and as we move into the world of A24 television. We'll see you soon.